www.media3.tvpodcastnetwork.
Okay, kids, get ready to be subjected to our new fall shows.
He gives me a nice warm feeling in my eyeballs.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 130 for the week of September 19th, 2016. I am those wet black leaves at the bottom of the pile, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Pumpkin Ale, Sarah D. Bunting. Noisy Corduroy, Tara Ariano. And new lunchbox, Eve Beatty.
Can't I just get homeschooled?
Welcome back, everybody. It is episode 130 of Extra Hot Great, and Eve Beatty is back with us to discuss the fall season. Hello, Eve.
Hi, guys.
Welcome back.
Yay!
To give you the as complete as possible Extra Hot preview of all the fall shows
that we care about:
the good, the bad, the ugly, the disappointing, and the disinherited from our DVRs. We're going to start with a new show that each of us is really excited for. Eve, why don't you kick us off?
Great. Well, something that's on my DVR because it premiered last night is The Case of JonBenet Ramsey. Feel like that could be good. Sarah, you kind of pumped it up a couple of weeks ago, and so I'm hopeful that you were right, and if not, I will hold you responsible.
I was right, and
okay,
you're free to hold me responsible. But well, yeah, it's having seen 78 hours of other JonBenet programming, I was like, is this even gonna, like, am I gonna kill myself in the middle of this? It's very good. I think you'll really enjoy it, but I'm really interested to hear what you think once you've watched.
Okay, good, good. I also am psyched about, once again, because of a praise from others, the Lethal Weapon show, which, as you guys know, and as Tara mentioned, I was very peevish about because they had this whole thing like, you have to stay for this end of the episode of Empire, and I just wanted to get started writing my piece for Previously TV about it. Instead, I hung on, and then it was like, freaking 5 minutes of Lethal Weapon. So I was enraged. I've been enraged for like 3 months, but then Tara says it was pretty good. And I like Damon Wayans Sr. So fingers crossed for that. And finally, Sarah, you're going to be pissed about this one. But every time I see a commercial for Pitch, I start crying. Like, just like, I could cry right now just thinking about the commercial.
I want to be wrong so badly. Because Michael Beach is my boy, but I don't know. We'll see.
I watched it last night and I did start crying. I texted Sarah, not knowing that since it was 11:30, she'd already been in bed for 2 hours, but it made me start crying less than 10 minutes into it. I don't care about sports at all, but I love women's sports movies in particular. A League of Their Own is one of my favorite movies of all time. It's not bad. I can't speak to the baseball accuracy of it, but the dramatic story parts of it really work, especially considering I didn't think that lady was shit since Under the Dome, but she's pretty good.
The furniture of the show, I mean, sorry, but I mean like the graphics, the actual baseball commentators on the
show
seemed very
true. It seemed very real.
Yeah. And it seems like they have a large amount of cooperation from Major League Baseball Incorporated on this, because it's all...
Yes. Like, they have been showing the pilot in minor league baseball stadiums for like the last month.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. They didn't have to do like, you know, major organization baseball with the, you know, the West League and the East League.
Yes.
Now playing for the New York guys.
Knights.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Worst.
Yeah.
Well, good. I am relieved to hear that. And that makes me even more excited to see it because I love any inspirational sports movie, regardless of the sport, even though I'm not like a huge sports fan or anything other than basketball. But I'm, you know, any inspirational sports thing I love. And then when you add to the mix, like a woman and all the stuff around that, and it's just like, I am, you know, they would have to be pretty bad for me not to want to watch it. So I'm excited about that. What about you, Tara?
Hang on. Pop quiz.
Uh-huh.
According to the song from the movie, what is a lethal weapon? The answer is love.
Oh, of course.
I had so many vulgar possible answers.
I was like, well, farts. What else you got?
Because farts are a lethal weapon.
I thought maybe like a dangerous mind. All right. My new show that I'm excited for is another one that I watched this weekend. We watched a lot of screeners. Although this one already premiered early on Hulu, it's Speechless. It's a new family sitcom on ABC. It's in their Wednesday night family sitcom block. Very smart, along with The Goldbergs and Blackish and something else. Oh, Modern Family, the one I always forget. This one is the lead into Modern Family, I believe. And it stars Minnie Driver is the mother of three sort of late tween or teen kids, the eldest one of which uses a wheelchair and has various disabilities. And so she's become like his advocate, trying to get him into all of the best, you know, schools that, depending on what resources they offer for children with special needs. And so she's been a real bulldog and all of the schools already know about her. And she's the nightmare that they all are like scared to have to deal with because she is, you know, very determined to make sure that he gets the best of everything that, you know, a non-private school education can afford him. And so this is about the family getting started at this latest school that she's found. And he's got a new aide that's going to go to every class with him and speak for him because one of his disabilities is he doesn't speak. He has a keyboard that he, you know, activates with his eye. But the woman that they've assigned him is really dorky. And so it's not a good fit. She doesn't say the things that he is actually saying on his keyboard. So that's obviously a problem and kind of unprofessional. But without giving too much away, the family is very likable. The second oldest kid is frustrated by how much of the family's attention has to go to his disabled brother. Obviously, you know, he's not a monster, but he's also a person. And so there's some tension around that. John Ross Bowie plays the dad, and he is great. There's definitely a through line from this character to his harried FBI agent from the beginning of The Heat a few years ago, which I also enjoyed very much. And Cedric Yarbrough is in it as a groundskeeper at the school. And at the end of the episode, we find out he's going to have a bigger, more important role. And he is a delight. You may remember him from Reno 911. He's the best, and he's the best in this too. And I'm excited to see where it goes. And I've had like mixed results with ABC's family shows of late. I don't watch all of them. But this one, I think, is definitely in my wheelhouse, and I'm excited to continue watching it. Did anyone else watch it?
They've been pounding, for whatever reason. Bravo shows on the Bravo website are packed with ads for this show.
Huh. Oh, and on broadcast, too. Because like I marathoned like flipping out yesterday, like the last four episodes. And just like even in Fast Forward, like it was constantly being advertised there, too.
And the ones that they had on last week, I was like, wow, this looks annoying. Minnie Driver looks beautiful. Mm-hmm. She's not aged in 15 years. Nope. Good for her. But I was like, dang, this looks annoying. Like, it's an interesting concept. And it's too bad that this is the campaign mm-hmm. that they're going with because it's standing on my short hairs.
Yeah.
And then they switched the campaign. And the ones that I was seeing this morning when I was doing Real Housewives of New Jersey looked way better, like looked way more interesting. Incorporated the new aide into it more, let the oldest son actually do some acting instead of it being Minnie Driver being a lot. So
yeah.
I don't know. Like, I'm intrigued, and I'm intrigued that you liked it. Probably enough to watch it because sitcom, but sure. I don't know. Keep me posted.
I'm hopeful about it mostly because it features a disabled character who's actually played by a disabled actor, which is not the way TV usually goes. And then you get gross stuff like the wheelchair kid on Glee having a dream where he like gets out of the chair and dances, which barf, like that's not okay or helpful or the kind of representation I would imagine that disabled people actually would want in pop culture. So this, I think, will be more sensitive and more interesting and thoughtful about all of that stuff. So that's why I was pleased by it. Next up, Dave.
Yes, Dave.
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 So last week we talked briefly about Luke Cage. Still excited for that. I want to watch the back half. We watched the first half coming out in a couple weeks, so I'm sure we'll talk about it more next week, I'm guessing.
Week after next. September 30th it drops.
So that is one, but the other one I wanted to mention is a show that was supposed to come out this year, got bumped early next year, and that's American Gods on Starz. The adaptation of the novel, and the novel is fantastic. If you haven't heard about it, somehow seek it out. It's really, 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 really good, guys. You can't go wrong when you got Ian McShane playing a all-powerful guy. You know, and being all smarmy and know-it-all-y, you know, it's you know, if you gave Al Swearengen less swears, but replaced the less swearing with, you know, omnipotent powers, then, you know, you kind of got his role there. So very excited about that. I'm a little puzzled, like the equation last year was, and I think maybe, like American Gods was going to be a TV show and, Sandman, which is Neil Gaiman's other big property, was going to be a 2-hour movie, whereas I kind of thought maybe those roles should be swapped. I think maybe the Sandman thing has fallen away. I know Joseph Gordon-Levitt was involved and basically said, I think this is unfilmable again, and then it's back on the shelf as far as I know. But I always thought like Sandman should be the TV show and American Gods could be just fine as a movie. If that was the way things had to work, they both could be TV series. I think they would both be better as TV series. Don't know why everybody wants to make Sandman a movie. I don't know if Sandman is actually filmable. It is so episodic. It's so anthologized that if you actually just filmed the parts where the Sandman has a direct role in it, you've actually like reduced your your source material by 2/3. So anyways, it's interesting. I would love to see these sort of big world Neil Gaiman things on the screen. I'm very interested. The trailer for American Gods looked really slick, and I'm looking forward to it.
They played it very smartly before The Force Awakens on the Starz presentation of The Force Awakens, which we recorded just because, so that it's on the DVR in case something happens to all our other versions of it.
Yes, Starz. Yeah, formerly known as Starz, now the Star Wars The Force Awakens Marathon Channel. Sarah.
Well, I have two. The one that I have not seen yet that is not a surprise to me is Frequency. I don't know if you remember this little movie starring James Kevziel and Dennis Quaid. Dennis Quaid played his father who had died but had left him a ham radio set, and then they wound up being able to communicate with each other somehow through a tear in like the audio veil. It's the kind of thing that sounds insane, but of course it's total bunt nib because I'm like, ooh, I wonder if that's
possible.
This is
a remake of Bill Cosby's Ghost Dad.
Yes, it is. And I'm super excited to endorse anything with Bill Cosby in it. Not. So that could go a number of really terrible ways. Like, in fact, there's only a couple of ways in which it could be good and myriad ways in which it could be a disaster. But it's on the CW, and I feel like the CW is the lane for this.
Yeah.
That they will sort of, because it's a still kind of a netlit, and they do a lot of like post-apocalyptic supernatural stuff, but successfully and not too, like the real danger here is that it would be really ponderous and have no sense of humor. And I think that this network is good at not letting that happen.
They also made the Jim Caviezel role played by a lady this time. And it's Peyton List of, Mad Men fame, of Roger's much, much, much younger wife fame.
Yeah, I'm sort of two minds about that. The casting is maybe not the best. Anthony Revuivar is not usually my favorite, although he did, when he was on Southland, he did sort of turn it around for me. Mm-hmm. But that might have been that show. So I hope they do something fun with it. As one of the four people who didn't work on Journeyman who actually watched it, this is the kind of thing that I like. Here's the other one, which I just finished a screener for, and I am shocked that I like this.
Oh, my God.
Maybe this isn't shocking to anyone else because I do like Blue Bloods, but Bull.
Yeah!
Oh, no.
It's actually not terrible. Like, it's
Sarah, he got
clever.
You off, just like the poster said.
I know.
I thought that was like an old person show.
Well, hi. Who are you talking to?
Sarah has
a lot older than you. I can
meetings.
Say this.
Oh, my. I mean, it's pretty, like, my issue with it was sort of like, it's on CBS, it's A. It's about Dr. Phil, which barf. And it's Michael Weatherly, who is like this non-person. He's like the David James Elliott of the aughts. Like, who? Like, he was on NCIS. what? Like, yeah. That doesn't narrow it down. If he wasn't Mark Harmon, nobody knows who it was. He was the one who Mark Harmon always whapped upside the head. I mean, right. I guess he did that to everyone. He's actually pretty charming here. Like, there's some, I will have a new show fact sheet up shortly after this episode drops, which you can find at previously.tv. There are some issues with it, starting with, like, it has to have these little, like, heartwarming moments that humanize Dr. Bull. But it also is very clever, some very clever interplay, and, like, it's kind of numb-threers, but with jury selection, which I sort of liked. I found it appealing. Paul Adonazio is the creator, and he was a writer and producer on Homicide. I mean, granted, he was also a writer and creator of Century City.
Lawyers in Space.
But, yeah, Lawyers in Space. Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be... It's not going to be The Wire, but for what it is, it's good.
Hey, can I ask a question going back to Frequency for a second? Since this is on the CW and I assume it takes place in the modern day, can I guess what they replaced ham radio with? Does the dad communicate from beyond over Snapchat now?
I think it's still a ham radio.
What? That's crazy. Missed opportunity for
cyber. It's not that crazy. Speaking of crazy, Eve... What returning show are you excited for?
Well, you'll think I'm crazy for saying this, but I...
So it was a good segue.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Thank you. but unlike, like, everybody else, including Omar, who covers The Walking Dead on Previously TV, I am excited for the return of The Walking Dead. I feel like we're at, like, a really interesting turning point in the show. I'm hopeful that more of our regular people are going to get killed soon. And, you know, with the idea that we have all these other new people on Jeffrey Dean Morgan's side, you know, that we can become friends with now, and maybe we can get rid of some of the people whose arcs sort of ended. I mean, and I say this sort of like reluctantly because like Carol's my favorite character, but I feel like they're running out of like ideas of what to do with her. Oh, should we kill people? Should we not kill people? And I mean, I'm just ready for all of those motherfuckers to die pretty much. And for new people to be there and be interesting instead, because everyone looks so tired. Like, you know, Andrew Lincoln, it's just like, when's the last time he got to eat or shave? You know, what's his name? The motorcycle guy, you know, I just feel like his forehead must be so zitty from that hair. I feel like all those people just need to take a break and we can have some new people and that's fine. And so I'm excited to see what happens this season. And also, on sort of a different note, Wednesday nights, TV Land did something that I think is really makes sense, and that's that they've made it Impastor and Younger into a block starting on September the 28th. I love both of those shows. They're, you know, just little dumb confections, Impastors, where the Lex Luthor guy from Smallville is a fake religious person. If you look on Previously TV, you'll see a pitch I wrote for it last year. And Younger, of course, is where an incredibly beautiful 40-something woman somehow convinces people she's 26. they're both like goofy little sort of I'm lying to the world shows that I find very enjoyable. And so I'm happy to sort of have them both there together on my DVR on Thursday morning to watch that day. Tara, what about you?
I have a couple. One is coming back tonight as this episode drops. The other premiered last week. Project Runway, the premiere last week one, is
That was one of mine too.
I was pleasantly surprised by how much I liked that premiere. The looks that they made, especially considering it was an unconventional challenge and it was the first challenge, were surprisingly really good almost all the way across the board. The person they booted was definitely the right person to go first. His look was terrible. And the characters that they've gotten to cast this season, I think, are really like compelling and fun to watch. And I'm sure I will regret saying all of this in about 3 weeks. But as of right now, I'm impressed that in season 15, Project Runway can still make itself, you know, a show that I look forward to watching every week. So congratulations to all of them. And my other is Brooklyn Nine-Nine. We watched the screener of the premiere a couple of weeks ago. As you will recall, they left off season 3 with Holt and Jake in witness protection in Florida, living side by side as next door neighbors in Coral Gables. So we pick back up with them in season four and find out what they have been up to and what they're trying to do to be able to go back to New York. And without giving anything away, it was a very enjoyable half hour of television. A lot of surprises, a lot of frosted hair. It was really good, especially considering, spoiler alert, that the episode takes place entirely, the first episode takes place entirely in Florida, so it's only those two. And, you know, some might say that's not enough to carry it on. I frankly think they could have put Holt with any other single character from that show and it would be fine, because he's the best. So yeah, we did a full Brooklyn Nine-Nine rewatch this summer, so I'm even more excited to get back on board with that one. Sarah, you already mentioned Project Runway, what else?
I think you meant Dave.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Duh. Sorry. My name's Tara. Duh.
Time
for another Tara update.
I'm dumb. All right.
I am dumb.
My returning show is November 30th is the return of Vikings. Last season wasn't the best. That was the Paris siege season. And it kind of floundered a bit in the middle. They kind of like went there, then came back, and it was just sort of, it's all right, not great. But then they did this thing at the end of the season where basically Ragnar is like, you know, nobody really thinks he's a cool dude anymore, so he goes away. And then the whole show fast forwards about a decade into the future, where of all Ragnar's kids are sort of at the age where they can start taking responsibility for the clan and start having some influence there. And we're learning that his son, Ivar the Boneless, who is a paraplegic, who is an actual historical character, that's just not mean writing on their point, is a brilliant tactician, a brilliant leader, and sort of in the grand scheme of history, far outshines his father as far as things written about him, you know, what historians think. And then Ragnar kind of comes back to the village after 10 years. And that's where this season will start. So I'm pretty excited to see what they're going to do with that. Kind of reminded me of the fast forward in Battlestar Galactica, where suddenly it's just like, well, all this shit happened, and here's where the colony's sitting right now. Cylons everywhere. And it's sort of like that. Mm-hmm. It was a smart move, because I didn't need to see any more of the fall of Ragnar, because it was getting kind of boring. And they did one of Dave's most annoying plot things, is somehow a Viking leader in the year whatever the hell this is in the Dark Ages gets addicted to opium. A fucking druggy Viking leader last season. Like, fuck off. I hate that storyline so much. It's been done so many times. It is so lazy. Think of something else for them to get all bent out of shape about. So anyways, excited for
Snapchat?
Vikings. What's that?
Snapchat.
Yeah, Viking Snapchat. So yeah. So Sarah, now it's your turn.
Yes, thank you. The returning show that I am excited for, especially since now the highly underrated Clayne Crawford seems to have found a new job and I can stop worrying about him, is Rectify. The final season bows on October 26th. I'm very interested to see where it's going to go. I'm really going to miss the show. And I think that a lot of other shows owe it a sort of a debt, because yeah, it was really sort of on the leading edge of like, we're going to be, our seasons are going to be however long we want, and we're just going to figure it out, and we're going to tell the story that needs to be told in the time that that story takes to tell. Granted, it may have, you know, brought us the self-indulgence of Mr. Robot. I don't mind that show. A lot of people are over it, and I get it. But yeah, Rectify has really been a treat to watch, and I will be sad to see it go, but I can't wait to see how they wrap everything up.
I'm so scared to praise it by saying like how beautiful it is, because I feel like that's going to put people off, like, oh, it's going to be like going to a museum. But it's not. It's like really gripping, in addition to being lovely and still and slow and wonderful and perfectly cast.
And it's just
and
one
active
like floor of a museum, because yes, some of the seasons are like five episodes. Like you can do it in a weekend. Mm-hmm. If you haven't tried it, like, we're sorry to be those people who, we were also those people about The Wire, but we're correct.
It is really
so if
good.
You've not seen the show yet, you should rectify that. Bifocals, deal with it. Changing the subject. Eve, is there a new show that you feel like you should be excited about, but you're just not into it?
Yes, sorry, I had the wrong order here. So, yeah, so several people have told me that I would or will like the show Notorious. I don't, have you guys gotten a screener or watched it yet? I have not.
We did get a screener, but I haven't watched it.
Okay, so what it is it's a show where it's like a crime drama and a legal drama, and it's the media and all this stuff where there's a defense attorney and a news producer who are sort of working together to manipulate the headlines and game public opinion and all this shit. So a Piper Perabo.
Oh, wait, is this the latest attempt to make Piper Perabo
exactly and happen? I'm sure she's a lovely person. I am sure she's, I know that she's kind to animals. She
are you?
Does commercials.
I heard she eats puppies.
They are delicious. But, and you know, I find her a little bit cold, and I'm not even saying that like, well, she's a powerful character. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of hers. And I also just sort of, you know, it's ABC. And they just, yeah. I don't know. And even though I know that they have a news arm, I feel like anyone who's affiliated with that never seems to communicate with any of the scripted shows that talk about the news industry, which, listen, working in the news industry is pretty boring, just like everything else, right? You don't really want a show that is like working in a newspaper or like, you know, working at a coffee shop or like working in a hospital because there's all the boring stuff. But still, I just think it's probably going to be super, super dumb, but everyone keeps saying, oh, you're, because the thing is, I like all of that sort of, you know, behind the scenes process. Oh, and also J. August Richards is on it, and I love him. He was on Angel. He was the black guy. And so, you know, I think that he's terrific too. So that's another reason that I should like it, but I don't know. It leaves me like totally cold and feeling just smooth down there. I don't know. Tara, you?
Okay. I mean, not for the same reasons that you said, but mine is
what just happened?
One Mississippi, the Tig Notaro show that premiered a couple weeks ago on Amazon. I am sure it's great. It's getting pretty good reviews. The thing about it is it would have to get rapturous reviews that were like positive across the board for me to be into it, because I enjoy the comedy of Tig Notaro very much. But I've already heard this story told in her album and in her last stand-up special. And if I had read her book, it was in there too. Like,
Mike Birbiglia all over again.
It's not to say it's not an interesting, gripping story, but it's like, I don't know if I have another, you know, 2.5 hours to spend on this story, especially when it's on Amazon, the freak streaming service that's so inconvenient to watch, to be the only one that doesn't have a fucking Apple TV app. So I have to like think about where it is. And this is why I never get around to watching Amazon shows. I've said it before and I'll say it again. So,
I could show you. It's not that hard.
I know how to do it. It's just a hassle. I know
yeah,
how.
Just push it. If even I know how, but yes, it is a pain.
It's not that it's whatever. My point is, in the age of of peak TV,
it's a barrier to entry that
it
you
is,
don't need.
In addition to which, to Eve's point about Notorious, when I was setting my DVR recordings for this week, I paused on it and thought, should I, like, I feel like 10 years ago, there's no way I wouldn't have at least sampled the premiere. But now it's like, I know this is not a show I'm going to probably super duper love. So I just can't. Like, I don't have time for shows that are like kind of good. They just have to be either super duper compelling to me or complete garbage, which is a whole other category. But like One Mississippi, I'm sure it's great. It would have to be superlative for me to like jump over all of the barriers that it would take to watch it. So sorry, One Mississippi, unless I hear you're amazing, I can't. Dave.
Hey, all right, so
good job.
I've mentioned it before, so I'll just say the title. I should be excited for, but I am not excited for, Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency. Talked about it a couple weeks ago. I just don't have faith that anybody knows how to film that. And Elijah Wood, he's just sort of like, just kind of is a little Dave Poison-y for me. I just don't enjoy him. Sarah, take us home.
That is totally fair. As mentioned before on this very podcast, Pitch, I hope I'm wrong, reasons previously stated. Also, this has nothing to do with Pitch, but like my Twitter feed sort of lit up a little bit over the weekend with a like references to some fucking idiotic quote think piece.
Oh, in the New York Times.
The New York Times.
Yeah.
That was like, how is pitch going to appeal to sports fans and people with boobies? Fuck off. God, that pisses me off.
Man, I'm so glad I've already read my 5 free articles for the month, so I don't even have to think about that.
I didn't even click on it. I was like, bite me. This is so stupid. It's not 1979. No. How is this still a conversation? Ugh.
Stupid.
Yes. Speaking of stupid, returning shows that you're finally giving up on. Eve, start us off.
Speaking of stupid, Eve. Well, so I am.
There was a colon there. Oh, you know what? I'm not helping. Go ahead.
Speaking of stupid, my colon. I am such a big fan of the movie From Dusk Till Dawn that for last Halloween, my husband and I were the Gecko Brothers. I was Clooney, of course.
Of course.
Please tell me one of your dogs was Sex Machine.
No, one of my dogs was Salma Hayek. I like Robert Rodriguez. Like, I'm like all for sort of like the whole like indie, I'm doing my own thing, I'm gonna make my own TV network and all that. Like, good for him. God bless. I know it's not like one of those things like they took his great idea and somebody else fucked it up, because he was there letting his employees fuck up From Dusk Till Dawn.
You should specify, this is a TV adaptation that people might not know about. It's on the El Rey Network.
So the El Rey Network, which no one has, and so you have to find another way to watch it. Good luck with that. They adapted it into a TV series with a bunch of people you've never heard of and Jake Busey. And the first couple of episodes, it was sort of like, all right, they're putting in some of the stuff that he wanted to put in the movie and couldn't for time constraints and stuff like that. And then it just started getting incredibly dumb. Like, all of the powerful female characters that were in the movie they're not female. The Salma Hayek character, who was sort of like this big head vampire who was super evil, it turns out she's like enslaved to all, Wilmer Valderrama. She's enslaved to freaking Wilmer Valderrama of all fucking people, right? And so it's just
still
like
alive.
Well, okay, wow. So it was nice. Wilmer Valderrama was like playing like a heel, and that was nice. But then you got really tired of that too. So by the end of the season, I was just like, man, I don't know if I want to do this. And I was in the car, and I said to my husband, like, oh, so you know, From Dusk Till Dawn's, back. This was like earlier this month. It's back, and my husband's like, why? All we're gonna do is bitch about it. Do we need another thing to bitch about in our lives? And I thought, he's totally right. So it's not happening. Even though I love the property, I'm done. I'm done. Tara, you?
Well, it's rough that you're the one that's my lead in, because my show that I'm dropping is one that you cover so ably on previously.tv that I don't have to watch it anymore, because I can just read your posts, which are excellent.
There you go.
Empire. I was already starting to sort of drift away from it last season, and then with the finale, it sort of had a peak. There was some good soapy stuff where I was like, maybe. And then when I started seeing promos for the new season, I was like, nah, I've had enough Terrence Howard in my life forever. So Empire is the show that I'm going to have to give up. I'm sorry. I will be with you in spirit and as a fan of you, Eve, not so much of Empire, and also Taraji P. Henson will be fine.
But not even with Felicia Rashad and Mariah Carey, that neither of them play you enough. You were so excited about Rashad just a couple of weeks ago.
I was, but I don't know. There's so many other
into it. The show's garbage, but
there's so many other people in it that I can't. And knowing sure. that Andre is still going to be like a fairly major part of it, like I can't care about any of them. I'm sorry. But you still got my heart. I'm still supporting you when there was only
Thank
one.
You.
Set of footprints. It was when I was carrying you, Dave.
Well, you know my feelings on gimmick episodes, right? Your musicals, your flashbacks, your cast playing, you know, kind of a photocopy of themselves in some other era.
Uh-huh.
I'm against it.
Mm-hmm.
And the show that really kind of tested my patience with that last year was Black-ish.
Oh,
so I think if I keep on seeing those sort of episodes in Black-ish, I might be done with Black-ish this year.
I think they only did that for the finale.
They did
The previous finale was also one of those.
Yeah, they did the jazz era.
That was the one. That was the season one finale, yeah, and then anyway, Good Times was the season two finale.
Yeah, I don't want any of that in my shows.
News Radio also did it for finales. Just saying.
Yeah, I feel like they become part of the mix now. Like almost shows are expected to do that. Like, you know, like so many shows have countdown to the musical episode. How are they going to shoehorn that in? I feel like it's just become part of the landscape now, and I'm against it. So here's me making a principal stand against it. Yeah. Way to go, Dave. Sarah.
Good job. My husband and I are making a unprincipled, we finally just had it stand against an entire franchise, i.e. To Wit and Fizz, the Master Chefs. We can't deal with it anymore. It's way too much filler. I want to climb into the TV, rip Christina Tosi's arm off, and beat her to death with it. She's so annoying and smug and annoying and smug. I can't anymore. I could hang with MasterChef Junior for a while because Gordon Ramsay was very surprisingly cute with the kids and actually would be an excellent teacher if he were in another life, like not famous and doing whatever it is he does. It doesn't make up for her, and now Graham's gone, and I can't anymore. And especially after a pleasant summer spent marathoning Great British Bake Off with my spouse, the contrast is just too stark. God knows what's going to happen with that.
Mm.
Now that everything's being upheaved, but yeah, MasterChef, I am done.
This is a solution for my pitch I made last year for the reality equivalent of Red Zone.
Oh yeah,
which is they just pop in for the highlights of things, so you can watch MasterChef in about 7 minutes. Ditto The Voice and everything else. They just show you the important highlights where people start to sing at a pitch, where judges get really mean, where people win, and then you just go on your merry way. Like you spend an hour watching reality for the whole week.
Well, in order not to end on a complete negative, articulating someone's limbs and killing them with it note, we thought that we would wrap it up with a new or returning show that each of us thinks another panelist would enjoy. Eve, do you have anything to recommend to anyone else on the panel?
Well, I'm at a disadvantage since you guys have all known each other for like 20 something years or whatever. Feels like it probably. And I basically know
sure
you guys
does.
Through Twitter. But I do know that one of my favorite things is listening to Dave react to various shows. And that is why I am hopeful that Dave will give Aftermath, which is a sci-fi show. So see, I feel like I've got two good things going for me.
I haven't heard of this. I don't even know what it
is. Okay. Well, here, I have the press release before me. It's a new 13-episode thriller about one family, Karen and Joshua Copeland, and their children, Dana, Brianna, and Matt. Don't you hate them already? Who must battle for survival after civilization comes to an apocalyptic end, triggered by massive storms, meteor strikes, earthquakes, and the plague, and the rise of supernatural creatures. Since it's a sci-fi show, that means that the effects are going to be...
When you say it's a sci-fi show, do you mean sci-fi?
On the sci-fi news.
Yes, sci-fi?
I mean, there's two Ys, an S, and an S.
Yeah, okay.
We know that the quality level of the writing and the effects on a show on the Sci-Fi Network is, you know, is tough.
Yeah.
And plus the subject matter seems like the sort of thing that Dave would either hate or mock or both. And so I look forward to Dave at least watching the screener and making fun of it.
Yeah. That's not even a will Dave hate this because that sounds terrible.
Oh, no. I would have saved that and pitched it as a will Dave hate this later if I thought that
I'm not going to name any names, but even people who work there think it's a total bomb. So I also am even more interested to hear what Dave thinks of it.
Oh, this is so exciting. I feel like I really picked a winner here.
All right. I'll watch it. I'll report back. Okay. Is Aftermath?
Aftermath.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Not to be confused with, it's not like there's a show called Math and then this is the after show, which is really too bad.
Chris
somehow
there.
Radar's on this show too. What the fuck?
Talking math.
Oh. All right. It's on my to-do list.
Excellent. All right. Thank you, Dave. Okay, Tara, what about you?
Mine is a suggestion for Sarah since I already had a win with Better Things and I was wrong. The Lenny Kravitz episode is the one that airs this Thursday, so please at least watch that one before you decide whether you're gonna check out forever.
Copy that.
I watched this screener last night, and this is going to sound like I'm a fucking crazy person, but I think Sarah might not hate This Is Us, the new NBC show.
What?
Not because I know Milo Ventimiglia. It's a tough
sell. Why are you not a crackpot? Because all I know about this show is the promos I've seen, which deliver me from the delivery suite on TV.
Yes.
And I hear that there is Milo crack.
Yep.
And I'm just saying no to that shit.
The crack is like basically the first thing that you see, in fact. Like, that's the crack that opens the episode. And I mean that literally. That's the first thing that happens. But do you know anything about the premise of the show other than his butt?
It's the new parenthood? No, I really don't.
Sort of. It's, yeah, the idea behind it is that it's following several characters who all have the same birthday. And so it's Milo's 36th birthday and then several other people that we also meet. So it's parenthood-y in that even when there's a storyline where you're like, I don't care about these people, it switches so often that you can kind of be more interested in the others and just watch for the people that you're actually interested in. And the ones that I think you will like are the one played by Sterling K. Brown, who is also his birthday.
Okay. Yes. Emmy winner, Sterling K. Brown.
Indeed. And his story is that he's looking into his biological parenthood because his story is that he was left at a fire station when he was born. And so he tracks down his biological father, who is Ron Cephas Jones, who was Mr. Robot. And who's really good in Luke Cage. Dave, that's the guy who's playing chess in the barbershop all the time. That guy. Who's also been in a whole bunch of Law and Order is.
He's like the poor man's Bubbles, basically.
Yes, he is, totally. The poor man's Bubbles' older uncle. Yes.
Yes.
And the two of them are so good. The third storyline is Justin Hartley is a sitcom star. Justin Hartley, formerly Green Arrow on Smallville, plays this guy who's like a sitcom star, and he goes through a meltdown and quits, and it's him and his twin sister, who her story is that she's very overweight, and so she goes to an overeating group and meets this guy who's played by the Irish guy from The Nick. What was his name? I forget. Whatever. That guy. The ambulance driver guy. Dave. Him.
Oh, yeah. Him. Okay.
And so the two of them meet, and so it's sort of about their story, but then it crosses over with the brother as well. The Milo stuff was, like, surprisingly not that much, and the way it ended, I thought it was going in a really bad direction, and then it totally turned it around where I was like, oh, damn it, that's amazing. So then by the end of it, I loved it. So even if you watch it and fast forward through the Milo, Mandy, and everyone else parts, if you only just watched it for Sterling K. Brown and Ron Cephas Jones, I think it would be a good 18 minutes of your life every week because they are spectacular.
I have to tell you, wife, this is not the worst pitch you could have made
for
this show or any other. And frankly, if there's any other like complete garbage that anyone wants me to watch, put Sterling K. Brown in it.
Yep.
Like, just even in a framed photo in the background.
Yep.
And I will watch it.
Dave.
All right. Well, this is a forced pick, but let's just say, because everybody's talking about how old they are in this episode, I've got a show for you all. And that show is the reboot of MacGyver.
No! Oh, no!
And why I'm pitching this to you will be further explained later this week on Previously.tv, where I'm writing a very rare article, the first time in a couple years.
Yes, we made him do it, and he agreed.
But I'll just give you this headline, and I'll leave it at that. You won't like the new MacGyver, but your 65-year-old World War II coffee table book collecting great uncle is going to love it. Sarah.
Okay, I have a couple of recommendations. The first is for Tara.
Yes.
I think she will enjoy The Crown on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
It's coming out for a couple months. Mm-hmm. But it should be costume, like vintage costume porn, as well as a little bit of history porn for Dave. So everybody wins in that household. But really, my main recommendation is for Eve. There is a show coming to A&E in November called The Killing Season. It is a limited series. I think it's 8 episodes. And it is a project about the prostitute murders, the like Craigslist prostitute murders, most of which have never come close to being solved. And we're the subject of an outstanding book called The Lost Girls by Bob Kolker, who writes about crime for New York Magazine.
That book is the best. That Beth Spotswood, my fellow contributor to Previously TV, and I, we traded that book back and forth during one vacation. That book is so good.
It's really good, especially since he like couldn't have an ending, and it's still brilliant. And then he very nicely, like, I tweeted about it and he nicely retweeted my tweet and was grateful to that I mentioned it. I was like, I have 24 followers on this account. You're very nice. Anyway, the director and creator of this project is a guy named Josh Zeman, who directed a documentary about another local, like, urban legend slash actual series of kidnappings. It was called Cropsey, and it was about the Cropsey legend of Staten Island. He also did a movie called Killer Legends, which examined how real murders created urban legends like the Lover's Lane Hook thing. He's really smart. He sort of is a character in his documentaries. If you really hate that, this won't be for you. But Alex Gibney is also producing this one. It's a solid topic. I think A&E more or less knows how to not like trash it up. Like if this were on ID, I would be concerned. I think this will probably be pretty good. And Zeman definitely has like a strong voice and knows how to deal with this kind of material. So that is what I recommend actually to everyone. I think it's going to be really good, but particularly to Eve.
Awesome.
I just watched that legend that what I can't remember what it's called. The Urban Legends.
Killer
documentary.
Legends. Yeah.
Killer Legends. Yeah.
Yeah. Which looks like it's going to be some garbagey average series from Nat Geo, and you just skip over it like 10 times and then you're like, oh yeah, that guy.
See, I thought it was going to be some found footage, you know, crap or something. And it, you know, because you see these people, it's like, oh, we're making a documentary, but they're kind of cute. And so you think, oh, this is going to be some found footage movie.
Totally. And, oh, it's Kickstarter legends. Great.
Yeah, yeah. And then I'm like, oh no, wait, these are actually famous people. It's all right. So thank you for the recommendation. I'll definitely check it out.
And thanks everybody for their picks, pans, and hopes. For the fall series, a lot more coverage on previously.tv, including 10,000 news show fact sheets if you want to get a little bit of a
And we'll be
dive.
Back with updates on various predictions for our fellow panelists, for sure. All right.
Indeed.
Dear Mr. President, there are too many states nowadays. Please eliminate three. I am not a crackpot.
Today's episode is brought to you by the top five reasons that Christine is not a crackpot.
Number five, all episodes of a TV show should be the same length so you can plan your watching appropriately. Finales can have a double episode, but only if they prove that they deserve it.
Number four, there are too many different streaming platforms.
Yes.
I shouldn't need a different Apple TV app for every network.
Word. Hey. Yes.
Number three, Revolution, the show where all the electricity stopped working, but would have been much better if it was about the immediate aftermath of the blackout.
Agreed. Number two, attractive men on TV and elsewhere should wear undershirts under their dress shirts. Undershirts are sexy.
And the number one reason that Christine is not a crackpot. If you're making a show about lawyers, don't just put random law books in the background. Ask a law librarian for help.
From your crackpot husband, Greg, and all of us,
happy birthday,
Christine!
Oh, that's a bummer. Sorry, Christine.
Wait, hang on. Have we ever had a good transition into the
water? No, never.
We really got to figure out 1 week to really figure it out. Like something about, I don't know, puppy massacres or something.
Oh, boy. Anyway, at least we were just talking about Sesame Street or something. That's right. That creepy music. It's time for the Blotter Presents. I'm just going to talk very briefly about the barrage, which I am very tackily calling the Jean Barrage of JonBenet Ramsey case programming over the last week. Dr. Phil's last part of his interview with Burke Ramsey, which is complete garbage time. Like, as if asking him directly, did you kill your sister, is going to yield a yes response with cameras rolling. Okay. That is airing as we record this. I obviously cannot live tweet that, quote unquote, sorry. Not that sorry. That was a waste. Dateline's two-hour wrap-up, in case you were a Mennonite and had not ever heard of JonBenet Ramsey, Mennonites from Outer Space, that was, I guess, a good overview. But since I am not a Mennonite from Outer Space, that was also kind of a waste. Investigation Discovery's three-part series from last week. Not great. Not as bad as I thought it would be. If it's sitting on your DVR, watch the first two. They're marginally interesting. skip the last one because John Mark Carr and his extremely strange hair and eye makeup situation get center stage, whereas like they talk a little bit about why exactly quote like DNA quote results in this case aren't exactly like ironclad because they're only using 4 points of comparison instead of 13. That gets buried in like the second part of the episode, whereas John Mark Carr being a weirdo and talking about how he was castrated and it actually hasn't been that bad, that's most of the episode. Why are you paying attention to that guy?
Okay.
Here's the headline. The case of JonBenet Ramsey, which is what started all of this, which was going to be a 3-part limited series on CBS and got cut down to 2 parts, 4 hours, that everyone else responded to by rushing their JonBenet stuff out ahead of it. I really thought after having watched 278,413 hours of JonBenet programming that I would be completely burnt and not enjoy this one, but it is extremely good. This is a very qualified team. It's Laura Richards and Jim Clemente from Real Crime Profile, the podcast. There are some other experts that you'll recognize, Henry Lee, Werner Spitz. They recreated the entire house, like in a warehouse, and had it set designed with everything the way it was, including like scuff marks on the wall and pots of jam on the counter and stuff. And it's really well done. I haven't noticed any problems with it like being cut down. There are some things I wanted to know more about, but I think shorter is usually better than longer and rehashing. Yeah. If you were waiting to see, like, if you're waiting until the end of this, like, wave of shows to see if this was any good, you can skip all the others and watch this one. And it will have concluded by the time you hear this. And you can read all of my coverage and skip all of it if you would like at previously.tv.
Sorry, this is the CBS one. I'm sure. I believe I saw that they're airing it again, like, after the original, you know, Sunday, Monday airings, that it's going to be on again. So check your listings because I'm sure you can find it. And if not, it's, I'm sure it's on demand.
One correction to earlier in your blotter presentation, Sarah. There are Mennonites on Earth, but in space, they're just Menons.
That's the stupidest thing you've ever said.
No.
Well, that was a tiny triumph in itself. I have another one.
For whom?
Which is, last week, I wrote a post on previously.tv, which you can see, we'll link it in the show notes. It was Narcos faces Law & Order SVU in the battle of the crime-fighting crushes. Pedro Pascal's Agent Pena from Narcos versus Chris Maloney's, obviously, Stabler from SVU. Someone tweeted it to Pedro Pascal and he retweeted it with flattered hashtag Pena will fuck your phone. You have to read the post to know what that's referring to. But I felt very special. And so thank you, Pedro Pascal. And please read that post. It was fun to write and it has lots
well
of butts.
Well done, everyone.
Hello, Extra Hot Great. My name is Elise.
And I'm Allison.
We have watched many, many shows from beginning to end together as roommates and via long-distance text and GChat. But Justified has always had a very special place in our hearts. We came for Timothy Oliphant's smoking hot everything. We stayed for the stories.
Timothy.
Off with his pants.
We've taken it upon ourselves to finally and at last fill a gaping hole in the canon and present to you season 2, episode 5, Cottonmouth of Justified for your consideration.
Side note, we would also like Timothy Oliphant to fill gaping holes in us.
Oh!
In the A-plot of this episode, Raylan investigates the disappearance of Loretta McCready's dad, Walt. The B-plot centers on Boyd embroiled in a classic heist. To open, Raylan Givens interrogates an imprisoned Dewey Crow, one of the show's all-time greatest and most hilarious tertiary characters. Dewey presents information which kickstarts the A-plot.
What fruit did this touch and new relationship bear?
Well, he says you don't know half of what's going on down in Bennett. He says if you did, you'd eat that hat and he'd be the one to feed it to you.
Dean was the muscle for the Bennett weed trade?
He says no, that ain't all he was doing down there. He says that the Bennetts are up to something big.
He mentions Loretta's dad, Walt McCready, now missing, was somehow connected to these dealings, too. A bunch of business follows that serves mainly to get Raylan back to the hills. A state trooper shows up and confirms that Walt hasn't been around for a while, but somebody's cashing his Social Security checks. Arlo and Aunt Helen appear and point Raylan to the Crowder family for more intel about who's trading in paper. Helen again warns Raylan against interfering in anything that might have to do with the Bennett family. Raylan, as usual, ignores her and hits the road. But first, Art captures the spirit of Raylan's work perfectly in a single line.
Because it seems like that Oxy bus is just sort of the tip of the iceberg as far as people trying to fill the Crowder's shoes down there.
And how exactly do you think Raylan here would be useful to you?
Art, I've been in Harlan 18 years. People still look at me like I'm some kind of Yankee come down there to burn their crops. But this guy...
I know my people.
You're like the hillbilly whisperer. Put you on Oprah.
We come to Ava's house, where a couple of Boyd's fellow coal miners are laying out their plans for a bait-and-switch coal mine heist. Fun fact, the crew of Redneck Hillbillies includes the ugliest member of MTV's fake boy band Together. The important things to know are Boyd was coerced into the job and learns the boys will kill him when they've got what they want. So he puts his own plan in place to make sure he gets out alive.
Raylan shows up, asking about Walt's Social Security checks. This is Boyd and Raylan's only scene together, but it's an important one. Raylan knows something shady is happening, but also that Boyd can handle himself.
Now, Boyd, I've been doing this long enough. I can spot outlaws at 1,000 paces. Your friends, they're packing, one and all.
Well, I wouldn't know, but I'm sure none of them's carrying with ill intent.
Well, that's good.
Boyd gives Raylan what he wants, not because he has to, but because they help each other when they can. They have a history. They share a knowing goodbye. Take care of yourself, Raylan. You too, Boyd. The entire show is building to the moment when Raylan and Boyd will be in direct opposition to each other. But for now, they're sort of brothers. Two people who come from the same place, but made very different choices.
Raylan follows Boyd's tip to the shady casher of checks, masquerading hilariously as a Christian ATV business. He tases the guy in the balls, and it is amazing. Raylan confirms that the Bennetts are the ones taking Walt's money, and that means Walt is probably dead.
Meanwhile, at the mine, the hillbilly guys carry out their plan, while Boyd works to undermine them and save himself. At one critical moment, the main hillbilly bad guy's cell phone goes off, a call that Boyd asked Ava to make. This gives Boyd the excuse he needs to switch the money bag for the explosives.
You ready?
Hey, so long there, boy!
Oops, they're dead. The hillbillies blow themselves up, and Boyd escapes. One guy survives, and Boyd shoots him. The camera holds on Boyd's face. This is his first truly criminal act since his so-called reformation in the first season. His transformation back into one of the show's principal villains is complete.
Cut back to Ava's house. Boyd arrives home, and she's waiting for him on the stairs.
Well, I can see by your face you're somewhat troubled. I can only imagine what I had to do with that.
Call this number at exactly 6:05 p.m. Don't tell anybody.
Well, I admit it was terse. I wrote it under some time pressure.
While Boyd could easily lie to her or skirt the truth, he instead chooses to be completely honest.
Why did you agree to rob that mine in the first place?
Because it's what I do. It's who I am, Ava. As hard as I've been trying to pretend otherwise, everybody else seems to know that but me.
The scene ends with the cops pulling up to the house and Boyd asking Ava to decide. Cover for him or don't. Either way, he'll understand. This is a true turning point for one of the most enduring relationships in the show. By making the call, Ava has chosen Boyd once and will choose him again and again for the rest of the show.
Finally, to the Bennetts. Mags's shadow hangs over the entire episode, and even though this is the only time we see her in the episode, these few minutes show us everything we need to know and have come to suspect about her and the Bennett family. Dickie and Coover went behind her back to cash Walt's checks and risked her family and their future. They must be punished.
I'm sorry, Mama.
Cougar, I know you're sorry. That's why it's going to hurt so much to have to do this.
Hey, now. Hey, now. Hey! Hey!
Put your hand on a stump!
Hey!
Put your hand on a stump!
Take what's coming.
Mama.
I'm saving your gun hand now.
Mama, don't hurt me.
Cross me again and I will leave you
Mama.
Nothing.
Mama!
You ain't got to do
it. You shut your mouth!
Mama!
Because you're crippled to the point of worthlessness. It ain't you down on that table. As it is, I have to hurt Cooper. And I like Cooper.
Mama, I love you. Mama, I love you. Mama, no!
Mags destroys Coover's hand with a hammer and then says, "We need to talk about what comes next." Throughout its run, Justified walked a line between procedural and full-season arcs. There were long-running villains and smaller conflicts that resolved themselves in the course of a single episode. Justified did bad guys better than any other show. We root for them even after seeing them at their worst. Mags Bennett is the show's greatest villain, and this episode culminates in one of her most terrifying moments. Raylan knows that he kicked the hornet's nest. In the final moments of the episode, he tracks down Loretta MacReady, hands her a burner, and says to call him if she ever feels in danger. Something's about to go down in Harlan, and as much as he tries to escape his hometown, Raylan will give everything to protect the few people he really cares about. For Mags, for Boyd and Ava, for Boyd and Raylan, and for Raylan's ominous prediction of things to come right at the end, we think this episode encapsulates some of the greatest qualities that Justified has to offer. Thank you for your consideration.
Thanks. We love you.
Thank you, Allison and Elise, for your submission. Very complete. I had a couple of notes. The thing I like the best about this episode is emblematic of the series when they talk so much about this whole business with Raylan trying to investigate who's trading in paper. It just like the show trusts you to figure out what it means. I mean, they sort of explain it too, but like it's so specific to the area. And I don't want to get into a whole like Harlan's like another character, but it is. And like so much of what makes Justified work to me is that it's rooted in its sense of place, and the crimes that happen are all like specific Dixie Mafia crimes. Even when you see like Boyd do his little move with the flip phone, it's like, yep, that's something that someone in this area would have.
But part and parcel with that, and one of the great things I always liked about Justified, is the stakes are never like super high.
Right.
Right. Like they allow themselves to be a show about relatively minor crimes, mm-hmm. but it's still very interesting and perhaps more interesting because of it. It doesn't have to be, you know, the mustache twirling, you know, supervillain.
Right. Well, that's why this is a problem for Mags, because she has figured out exactly how much crime she can reasonably get away with without attracting attention. And now her stupid idiot sons have gotten greedy and they've fucked up what is like a pretty good business for her that the feds or whoever else don't care about particularly. Obviously, Margot Martindale is the best. Her scene where she smashes up her dumb kid's hand is, I mean, it's horrible, but also like he had it coming. You have to discipline your children, because there's sometimes that's the only way they're going to learn tough love.
Stop. Hammer time.
It's funny that they referred to the guy in the heist crew as the ugliest guy from Together, because to me, he's the ugliest guy from the backyard wrestler episode of ER, like sometime early in the run. That's where
yes!
I know that guy from.
Oh, my God.
Is that the guy with the weird jaw?
Yes, he's okay. Like the
he
uglier
looks like
Jake
a cartoon.
Busey.
He really does.
And of course, the lead guy is Sirens. That guy from Sirens.
Oh, mostly.
We liked. The Megs, yeah. The last thing that I will mention, just as a side note, because it always bugged me when I would see it, is when Ava comes home from work in pumps. Ava is a hairstylist. Like, she would not wear those shoes to work. That would be stupid. But I think this is certainly a very good episode. It has lots of twists and turns, and it's emblematic of what made Justified good. But I was really looking forward to hearing the case that Allison and Elise made, because to me, it's good, but it's not. Like, the show is always good, but this is not, to me, a superlative episode. And it's certainly not, to me, even the best episode of this season. Mm-hmm. So it was fun to revisit it, but I'm not sure that they convinced me. Dave.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that season two is the best episode of season of Justified.
Yes.
But this is not the best episode of that season. For me, season two really is the Mags Bennett season.
Mm-hmm.
And there's very little of her in this, even though what is there is quite powerful. But, you know, I think I'd probably put maybe the finale up over this one. That said, I really did enjoy sort of just this little vignette, a day in the life of Boyd Crowder and his stupid friends, and how they're so out of their league trying to put one over on him. And, you know, is going to end very poorly for this, you know, stupid trio of kind of the bubbling Kentucky crooks. But to see it all happen, the fact that Ellsworth gets away in the end, Jim Beaver, you know, it's a nice little mini caper. I really enjoyed that part of it. So much so, I actually kind of wonder if this episode could have been stronger if it was more bodily. Mm. And it was just sort of like...
Just the Boyd storyline.
Yeah, just the Boyd storyline.
Yeah,
I feel like the other bits are such a small contribution to the episode that maybe it actually distracts from this kind of fun little, caper.
Let's go to Eve next because she watches. Okay, watched it.
So generally, I do agree with Tara that I think this is a good episode. It's not a great episode, and it's also probably not the best episode of season two. Eve.
So when I saw that this was going to, well, first, this was a really good presentation. I have to say that, though.
Yes.
I mean, it was good and it was funny and all that. So, like,
in our first dual presentation, I think.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. I like
extra
that.
Hot history.
I would like to hear more of those. I thought that was a lot of fun. I'm sure we have other readers with listeners with friends.
Maybe.
And when I saw that it was justified, I thought, okay, it's going to be it was in the bottom of the glass.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, it's going to be Arlo, you know, shoots Raylan, or, you know, it's going to be this or that. And so I was surprised that it was this episode out of all of season two, which I agree with everyone else is the best season of Justified, even though they're all good. And I was also surprised that if you're going to present an episode to the canon, that it's one that is so deficient in Tim.
Yeah.
Like, in my opinion, like, right there, that makes its inclusion in the canon problematic, because I think that if you're going to have a Justified episode go in, there's got to be at least one Tim line, because Tim was that's the sniper, the, you know,
yes,
sort of the helper dog.
Well, if we're gonna,
not Timothy Oliphant. It's
no.
Gutterson.
There's plenty of him. Yeah.
Yes.
And if we're throwing that, you know, criteria into the mix, I would say also the lack of Wynn Duffy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Was he even on the scene yet, though? I mean, was he?
This season he is, but not this episode.
That's right, because he has that whole thing with Winona.
Yep.
With the real estate deal. Oh, but that might be later this season.
It is this season, but he's not in it.
I don't know. It's been a couple of years, but I think we're still too early. I don't think he's been introduced as a character yet, but
not yet.
I agree that he's important if we're thinking about the show as a whole. But, you know, Tim was so perfectly used in the show. They never, like, did too much with him. There was never like an all Tim episode or anything. They didn't Jack Sparrow him, where they just like gave him too much and then you got sick of him.
Yeah.
I did like the whole like dumb caper heist thing, because I sort of did think like, well, you know, how's Boyd going to get out of this? You know, how's he going to work this out? You know, it's a fun little puzzle, and it's been long enough since I'd watched it that I couldn't quite remember how it was going to work out. And so I enjoyed that all over again. So I was happy to have the opportunity to watch all that once more. And I also do think that that moment where you see Boyd shoot one of his ostensible co-conspirators, to me, that is an important moment in that season, because that's the moment where you realize that Boyd realizes he can't ever be good.
Yeah.
That, you know, as much as he's trying, like, that's the thing. And I feel that, you know, Goggins has a tendency, I think, to not just chew the scenery, but like, you know, just like, you know, T-Rex it. He underplayed that so nicely there. And so I would like to give him some credit for that. And I, you know, whatever. Mags Bennett is so great. And I do think that that whole, you know, smashing the kid's hand thing is an important thing that we have to see at a certain point, so we don't just enjoy her as an anti-hero. But this episode is weird because it is just sort of like it's a hodgepodge, and the story isn't really forwarded as much as I sort of would expect it to be if we're presenting this, you know, as like sort of the, you know, the show on Amber or something. So it's not like it's bad. It's just an interesting choice.
Yeah. It's always tough with basically good shows. Sarah.
Yeah.
I have still not managed to watch all of Justified. So for me, here were the sort of canon worthy things. First of all, the line, "You understand mortgages and shit? I don't." I have one. I still don't understand the fucking thing. It's always nice to see Michael Mosley. It's always nice to see Nick Searcy playing Art, my husband's college buddy.
Oh.
Two accents diverged in a Tar Heel wood. And I married the one more newscastered by. Taser to the nuts. Gotta love that. Appalachian's 11 routine with Boyd. Gotta love that. Little gore, the boot with the bone sticking up out of it. Disgusting. Oh, yeah. Loved it. And one of my tests for the canon, and I think an occasional like watermark for other people on the panel, is whether you want to keep going when the canon episode is ending and like the next one is loading on Amazon Prime or whatever, you know, real streaming service you're using. And there was something about that exchange with Loretta and that actress just like being very matter of fact and hard about her dealings. And then also initially with Raylan, but then you could see that flickering of concern underneath the shell that I thought was interesting. I wanted to see more of that story. So yeah, I really liked it.
Loretta, she talks like she's just come out of Deadwood.
Yeah, totally.
She's got the same cadence, that same, yeah.
That actress is very good. She, Sarah, stays through it, like, right through the final season. So, I mean, spoiler alert that she doesn't die, I guess, but she keeps coming back.
Okay.
Okay, so as everybody's...
I don't have the perspective on it as, like, where this fits into the season or the show as a whole, but I really enjoyed it and wanted to see more. So
okay, so that sounds like a yes.
Needed
vote
more
Sarah.
Martindale, but I am going to vote yes.
All right, Tara,
I'm going to vote no with a heavy heart because it's, you know, as I said, it's tough when the show is always good, but this is not a high point for me, so I'm going to vote no. But thank you so much for the submission, which was excellent.
Okay, Eve.
I would love it if you guys came back and submitted another episode of Justified.
Yes,
because
dude.
I think you guys are really good, and I do think that,
or if anything, that was a great presentation. I agree.
It was a terrific presentation, and also I agree that Justified, you know, does need to be in the canon. I just don't think that this was the episode for it, so I'm sorry, but I'm voting.
I feel like they would enjoy the episode where Raylan Givens is in the bathtub with his boots.
Yes.
For
season
all the reasons.
Season 3, episode 1.
Wow.
I think.
Recall.
I think.
I agree. Fine episode. I really enjoyed the heist part of it. But overall, I think there are better episodes in season 2. So I'm going to vote no. So that's 3-1. So unfortunately. Yes, that means Justified season 2, episode 5, Cottonmouth. You are not inducted into the extra Hawkery Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time for Winner and Loser of the Week, Emmy edition.
Yes, I am not Smooth Joey Apollo, so this is just a quick roundup of the winners I was happy about and losers I was sad about from the Emmys, which as we record this were last night. And by the way, update on the pool, I heard from Andrew Jewell that out of 970 submitters to his Emmy pool, I came in 43,
that's
which
not
is
bad.
Not bad.
Wow. Not bad.
Well, since you mentioned it, I was going to do it after, but I'll just do it right now.
Yes.
Winner of the pool, and therefore a sub-winner of the week, didn't win an Emmy, but he won the Emmy pool. Jack, otherwise on Twitter known as JTM3RD,
nice,
was the top extra hot great submitter. So
good
congratulations,
job.
Jack. If you're listening, email me at ehg@previously.tv, and I will hook you up with a extra credit topic of your choosing.
Well done. Okay. American Crime Story was one of the bigger winners of the night. It won Best Limited Series and also acting awards for Sarah Paulson, Courtney B. Vance, and Sterling K. Brown, all So deserved. Regina King, once again, a winner for American Crime. Could have just as easily been a winner for The Leftovers, and I would have been perfectly happy. She's amazing. Key and Peele, winner of Best Comedy Series for their, or I guess, variety or sketch or whatever the fuck. I don't know. But winner for their final season.
The potpourri.
The potpourri of, yes. So they won for their final series. Also, as we mentioned recently, we just rewatched that too, and it's brilliant. There was such, some really
cartoons,
good stuff.
Cartoons, plural. Yes.
It honestly deserves to win strictly for the terrorists on a plane sketch alone. Drax, them, Skloons. Follow up from Mark's pick, Peter Scolari won his category after all that whole story of him getting the last place slot. And as Dave predicted, he'll probably win, and he did. Margot Martindale, as previously mentioned in the Justified submission, was a winner for the Americans. I feel like she wasn't really in it this much this season, but no. You know, I guess it couldn't be Frank Langella because he was in it too much. Who knows? And Tatiana Maslany finally winning for Orphan Black. Regina Saskatchewan's own Tatiana Maslany, also an alumna of the high school that I went to when I lived there. All right, losers. Matthew Rhys of The Americans and Bob Odenkirk of Better Call Saul both lost to Rami Malek. I mean, okay, I don't watch Mr. Robot anymore. Sarah, you do. How do you feel?
I feel okay about that. Okay. I don't watch The Americans. Right. I would have been really fine with anyone in this category. And
category.
I love Better Call Saul. It's my favorite show. But Malek is fucking carrying that shit in a huge sack. So good for him. I like that guy.
Speaking of Better Call Saul, Jonathan Banks, loser to Ben Mendelsohn of Bloodlines, the show no one you know watches. I mean, I'm sure someone watches it. But like, even Jonathan Banks, oh my God. He is so good at playing Mike on Better Call Saul. Total injustice. Every nominee who lost to Maggie Smith for Downton Abbey in what is essentially a cartoon role. Like, I'm sorry, but but Emilia Clarke, Lena Headey, and Maisie Williams of Game of Thrones, and Maura Tierney of The Affair, and Constance Zimmer, especially, of Unreal, all really not done well by in that role. Yes, Dave?
Attention YouTube channel creators. Here's an idea for you. The Krusty the Clown goes to record his doll lines. Except it's the Dowager Countess coming in to do her snaps
her
for the season.
Dowager Countess zingers? Yeah, totally. Donald Trump, this is going to turn everything around. Jill Soloway compared him to Hitler in her acceptance speech for directing Transparent. That's going to turn it all around. Oh, no. Now all the Trump supporters who listen to what Jill Soloway say are totally going to stop voting for him. Not. And finally, women. As cis men, Jeffrey Tambor and Louis Anderson both won for playing female characters, and Julie Louis-Dreyfus, who the camera caught having no facial expression when someone was winning in a category she was not even nominated for, and it like immediately turned into a meme. Let's leave women alone. She's allowed to not be rapturous when Kate McKinnon wins an award. Who cares? And that's my roundup.
All right. Well, speaking of things nobody cares about, do you know what time it is?
It's game time.
It's game time. Whee! All right, everybody, this is the fifth game time of the season. A reminder, first person to 5 points wins the season. Here's our standings. Sarah D. Bunting, number one with 2 points.
Woo! Wow.
Tara and Value Guest tied right behind her with 1 point apiece. Today we are playing We're Number Two from Shannon Clark, who earns himself an extra credit. Redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of his choosing. I believe Shannon, I hope I got this right. He is one of the winners of our listener game time.
Oh, nice.
Series.
Oh, fantastic.
And we'll be playing sometime in hopefully the near future, the first, you know, series of super champions or whatever we're going to do, where our last four champions play a game to determine a super champion.
God.
Yes.
And so the other three are killed.
Try to organize that. Fun. Shannon writes, everyone remembers number one and the lead actor of any given TV show. But what about number two? In this game, we'll take a trip in four rounds through some of the most well-known shows of the 80s, 90s, aughts, and teens, and try to guess the name of the second billed listed actor in the cast.
Oh.
This per credits or per IMDb?
Just hang on.
Okay, sorry.
There will be 15 questions in each round. Dave, that's me, will give you the name of the third build character. If you guess the second build character with that hint, as listed in the opening credits, you get 2 points.
Okay.
Oh.
If you don't know the answer, you can ask for a clue. The clue is the name of the TV show, after which the second build actor's name is worth 1 point. All right.
Okay.
So remember, shit. I am giving you the name of the third build character.
Okay.
Your job is to name the second build character.
Okay.
And here are some notes. Cast and credits change over the lifespan of a show. Therefore, all these credits are taken from season one of the shows.
Okay.
Where possible, all credit order listings have been verified by IMDb listings for the first episode and double checked against video of season one credits. All right.
Yes.
Oh.
A further note.
You want the character name, not the actor.
What did I say? Second build listed character, actor in the cast.
Actor.
Yeah.
Actor.
Okay.
That is the clue. What you need to do. And then,
okay.
Yeah. And then you give the clue is the third build character.
Got it.
Okay. Decade organization is general in nature. The plot and or first season may have aired just prior to the start of that decade. But
okay.
Known for that. So here's a gameplay example. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Your clue is Dr. Leonard Bones McCoy.
Leonard Nimoy?
It would be the correct answer. That is correct. And your clue would be Star Trek is the show. All right. Make sense? Everybody get it?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes.
Let's throw it to Piggy.
We will start with Sarah.
All right. We're going to go Sarah, Tara, Eve. Are we ready to play? We're... Number two.
Yes.
Here we go.
Yes.
Sarah D. Bunting. Your character is Amy Amanda Allen. And this is the start of our 80s round.
Amy Amanda Allen.
Is the character.
Is the character.
Third
build. I will
need
a hint.
The show, The A-Team. Who was second build on the A-Team?
Who was second build on the A-Team? I believe... Oh, shit. I think Mr. T was second on the A-Team.
No. Mr. T's last. He's the guy who kicks the saloon doors right at the end of the credits.
I thought George Peppard would be last.
Fuck. Yeah.
All right. Well, who is it?
Okay.
It is... Dirk Benedict.
Oh.
All right, Tara.
I was with you, Sarah. Yes?
Ernie, coach...
Thank you.
Pentuso or Pen?
Yeah.
Tuslo, maybe.
Okay. Second build.
Talk it through. If you know more information,
it's Cheers.
Okay.
Is the show. Presumably Ted Danson is build first. So if coach is second build. Oh my God. Oh, Shelley Long.
You are correct. That is worth 1 point.
Nice.
To
is that
Eve.
Worth 2 points?
No, it's 2 points.
Oh, that's right. You didn't ask for that clue. You just provided it. My apologies. 2 points.
Thank you.
Daisy Duke, Eve. Daisy Duke.
Oh, well.
Is in slot number 3. Who's the actor in slot number 2?
So I have to decide if Luke or Beau is number 2?
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe it's maybe Enos.
Uncle
is,
Jesse
had a good
is
agent.
Not number 2.
maybe Roscoe P. Cotrain.
Okay, I'm basically agent. Flipping a coin, and I'm just going to say Luke Duke.
Yeah, we need the actor's name.
Oh, the actor's name. Sorry about that. Shit. Tom Wopat.
That's the other one.
John Schneider. Also, you knew I was wrong.
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, back to Sarah. Sad. Alex P. Keaton.
It should have been Tom.
He was third? Oh, yeah. I put the parents first. Okay. Meredith Baxter Burney.
What?
Michael Gross.
She was
God
first?
Damn it.
Yep.
Good for her. Good agent.
Yeah. Tara Ariano. Anne Kelsey. Anne Kelsey.
Hint.
Ellie Law is the show. Anne Kelsey, third build as a character.
Oh,
who's second build as the actor?
Oh, I think it's the bald guy. Alan Rachins?
Our good friend Corbin Burnson.
Oh, sure.
I would have gone Susan Day.
Nice.
That's a tough one.
Yeah. Back to Eve. Yeoman Purser Gopher Smith. Do you know the show?
So the show is The Love Boat, but I don't know anything about The Love Boat. I'm out. I'm sorry.
Anybody?
Is it the doctor?
I don't know who that is. Okay. Is Bernie Coppell the doctor?
Yes.
Then
yes.
It was the doctor.
Hey.
Sarah D. Bunting, Detective Gina Calabrese. Calabrese. Wow, is she white and crusty on the show? Let's find out.
Gina Calabrese from the 80s.
From the 80s.
Fuck. I need a hint.
The show Miami Vice.
I thought so.
Oh, fuck's sake. Philip Michael Thomas is number two.
That is good for a point.
Nice.
Tara?
Yeah.
Jordy LaForge.
Jonathan Frakes.
That is good for 2 points. Done. Star Trek TNG. Back to Eve. Angus DePesto.
Agnes.
What'd I say?
DePesto. Angus.
Angus.
Agnes DePesto.
Well, so I assume
could have been worse.
This could be a mistake. I assume that number two then would be Bruce Willis.
You are correct. The show would be Moonlighting. Correct. Sarah D. Bunting, Theodore Calvin, a.k.a. TC.
What?
Theodore Calvin, also known as TC.
Space?
Not space.
I'm going to need a hint again. Sorry.
Show is Magnum P.I.
God damn it.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, the other guy. Yeah. Sanford Simsurf. I don't know.
Is it the short guy?
It's
Rick?
No, it's Higgins.
Oh,
John Hillerman.
I would have thought he would be and with whoever.
Yeah, okay, well, that's who I was thinking of, but I knew neither character nor actor and am going to lose.
Tara, Chrissy Snow.
Okay.
You know the show?
Yeah, it's Three's Company.
If you guys know the show,
yes. The show is Three's Company. Mm-hmm. Joyce DeWitt.
You have 2 points.
Wow, nice.
Eve Beatty, Steve Rhodes. Steve Rhodes.
What's the show?
Married with Children.
I think
that show killer.
No,
is
he
not?
Wasn't in that early.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so then number two would be Katie Siegel.
Nice.
That's good for 1 point. Sarah D. Bunting, your last question of round one. Fallon Carrington.
Wait, 2 points?
No, she asked for the...
Sorry. Okay.
Fallon Carrington.
Fallon Carrington. I'm pretty sure this show is Dynasty. And who would be number two?
Yeah.
Since I can't really remember anyone else who was on this fucking show, let's go with Linda Evans.
Nice.
Yes.
All right, Tara. Jackie Harris.
Okay, the show is Roseanne. And I'm going to say second build was John Goodman.
That is good for 2 points. Last question of the 80s, Blanche Devereaux.
Oh.
Yep.
Yes.
Is this the Golden Girls?
Sarah's having a stroke.
I'm so sorry,
John's
guys.
Having 5 strokes.
I'm sorry, you guys. You know that I wasn't allowed to watch TV when I was a kid. Assuming that it was the Golden Girls, then would number two be Bea Arthur?
Number two is Tara's favorite person in the whole world, Betty White.
Yeah, she ruins everything. Betty Shite.
All right, that is the 80s.
Oh, boy. Well, Sarah and Eve are tied with 3 each. I have 8.
Have 8?
Yeah.
All right. There's still 3 decades left to catch up. And let's see if Sarah can get this. Dr. Niles Crane.
Dr. Niles Crane. Who's number 2 on that show, which I assume is Frasier? So... Well, it's 1 of 2, and I'm not sure who it's going to be. So let's go with John Mahoney.
That's the other one. Jane Leaves. Yeah.
It's so hard when they have the with whoever, and it's the most famous
person.
Damn it.
Tara Ariano.
And you know what, Sarah? Her name on that show was Daphne Moon, so that is a legit space yell.
Yes, thank you.
Willow Rosenberg.
Okay, this is Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and if Willow is in third place, God, season 1. Nicholas Brendan?
That is good for a point. Eve, okay. Carmela Soprano. This is a tough one. What's okay, that show?
The show is obviously Sopranos.
The Flintstones.
Oh, the Flintstones, yeah. It's obviously Married with Children again. And so if Carmela is three...
Yeah,
well,
like
well I will say this. Here's a little hint.
Okay.
Think about season one and how much of something they were doing in season one.
Okay.
Maybe they didn't do so much in later seasons.
All right. That's a good clue.
Okay, so Michael Imperioli then?
Incorrect.
The mom?
Sarah?
Oh.
I believe it's Steven Van Zandt.
No, it's Lorraine Bracco.
Oh,
right.
Oh, of course. She's an Oscar winner.
Yeah.
She would be second billed. Yeah. I didn't even think of her.
Got to announce number 17.
Oh, Spread Eagle.
But this is number 19 yep. for Sarah. Richard Fish. Richard Fish. That's the
Richard
character
Fish.
In the number 3 slot.
Who would have been number 2?
Do you know the show?
Well, he's like the only one I knew besides...
What's the show?
I mean, it's Barney Miller, right?
All I can tell you is we're in the 90s.
Oh, right. The 90s. Shit. Okay. Can I have a hint?
Ally McBeal.
Oh, fuck's sake. God. The first season?
Yeah.
Who else was in that trash fire?
Dancing
wasn't
Baby.
Fish. Oh, Courtney Thorne-Smith?
No, no.
Oh, my God.
Phew. Well I'll done.
Dana, Dana Whittaker.
Ernie Miller.
Whittaker.
Dana Whittaker.
Whittaker. Oh, okay. Yeah.
You really have a problem with that name.
I do have a problem with that name.
Okay. The show is Sports
That's
Night.
That's the only name I have problems with, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The show is Sports Night. I'm going to guess that Peter Krause is second. Oh, wow.
Nice.
Eve, Daniel Desitaro. Desario. Sorry.
Desario.
Desario?
Yep.
Freaks and Geeks.
Jason Segel?
That's what I would have guessed.
John Francis Daly, number 2.
Oh, sure.
What? Nice yep. agenting.
Yeah.
All right, Sarah Bunting. Jeannie Sanders. Jeannie Sanders.
Sanders. Hint.
All right. Jeannie Sanders was the third billed character on The Larry Sanders Show. Who's second actor in the credits of The Larry Sanders Show, season one?
Second? Oh, crap. Tambor? Jeffrey Tambor?
Yep.
Nice.
Tara Ariano.
Yes.
Donald Cragen.
Okay. This is Law Ampersand Order.
Okay.
In season one, I think Chris Noth was billed second.
You are correct. 2 points.
Bless his heart.
Eve, Karen Walker.
Okay. Okay, I'll just say Deborah Messing.
You are correct. That
Will and Grace.
Will and Grace.
Nice.
A reminder to all our participants to say the show if you know it.
I'm sorry about that.
No problem.
Barney Miller.
For the benefit of our listeners as they play along. Susan Lewis. Susan Lewis for Sarah D. Bunting.
Sarah.
Ooh. And who? Oh, man. This is ER.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think if the Cloon would have been the Loon, but I think he actually already was. And number 2 was Anthony Edwards.
George Clooney.
Was second? Wow. Yep. God.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Tara Ariano, Frank Pembleton.
Okay, this is Homicide, Life on the Street.
But who was number 2?
Wait, he was number 3? He was number 3 in season 1? Frank was?
Yes.
Jeez.
That's the name of that.
Okay,
all the
okay, okay. I'm just surprised. God. fuck. Yaphet Kotto?
Any other guesses?
No. Anyone
That's
else?
What I would have guessed.
It's our...
Ned Beatty?
It's our most traveling character.
Yeah.
Richard Belzer as Munch.
Really? Was second? Jeez.
Yeah.
Shocking.
All right. Eve Beatty, Dr. Julian Bashir.
What show is this?
This is Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
I just realized Homicide's credits were alphabetical.
Space.
Deep Space Nine?
Yep.
Oh.
Second fiddle actor, Deep Space Nine.
I do not know.
Anybody?
Ronnie Miller.
Whoever played Kira?
It's Benson. It's Renee Aberbrook.
I was like, oh, really? Was it the Aubergenois?
Was it really?
Yeah.
Gosh.
All right. Sarah D. Bunting, Charlotte York.
God damn it.
Picky, you bitch.
Oh, honey, I'm so sorry. Picky's
real mean.
You just
watched these credits 6,000 times in a row for the marriage. Yeah,
94.
But I actually...
94 times.
Say the show first, Sarah, so Dave doesn't get mad.
It is Sex in the City. I feel like the one was at the end with the and. So, but I don't remember. So I'm going to go with Cynthia Nixon.
Incorrect. It's Kim Cattrall.
Or her.
Tara Ariano, Cosmo Kramer.
Okay, this is Seinfeld. And second build, Jason Alexander.
Julia Louise Dreyfus. Yeah. All right, ending our 90s, Phoebe Buffay for Eve.
Phoebe Buffay was number three. Marty Cox would have been. So number two. Jennifer Aniston?
All right, we're talking Friends. You had
Friends.
That part
I'm
right.
I'm so sorry. I get focused on the question. Friends.
You're wrong and everything else. Courtney Cox, second build on Friends season one.
Oh. They went alphabetical also.
Yeah.
God damn it.
All right, that brings us to the end of our 90s.
Jesus. This is getting bad, Beatty.
I know.
Okay, Sarah and Eve are still tied with 5 each, and I have 14.
There's still 2 more. All right, let's just play. All right. Alma
Don't
Garrett for
me,
Sarah D.
Barney.
Bunting.
I don't think she heard you.
Alma Garrett for Sarah D. Bunting, starting off our aughts round.
Oh, right. Alma Garrett. I was like, facts of life? Who was number two on that? Must have been Barney Miller. Kidding. We're talking about Deadwood. Alma Garrett. Who would have been numero dos? I never watched this show. Let's go with Timothy Off of His Pants. Why not?
Ian McShane from Deadwood.
Fucker.
Yeah. Okay.
Tara Ariano. Mm-hmm. Jesse Pinkman.
Okay, this is Breaking Bad. Second build, Anna Gunn.
You got 2 points. Eve Beatty. Smash Williams.
What show is this?
Friday Night Lights.
So would number two be Connie Britton?
It would.
Ding, ding, ding,
1 point.
Ding.
Sarah D. Bunting, Pete Campbell.
Oh, gosh. Not great, Barney. That is Mad Men. Season one. Shit. I don't know. January Jones?
Elizabeth Moss was number two.
Oh, sure. Right. Oh, good for her.
Tara Ariano. Kara Starbuck Thrace.
Okay, this is Battlestar Space Galactica. second build, Mary McDonnell.
You are correct. That's good for 2 points.
Nice.
Back to Eve, Ruth Fisher, not from Barney Miller.
Isn't it?
It
isn't.
Not from Barney Miller. So what show was it from?
6 Feet Under, Fisher and Sons.
I cannot remember. I can't remember his name. I'm sorry.
Well, you were right, but you can provide the answer. That's Michael C. Hall. We'll give you a Dave point for knowing it without knowing
it. Thank you.
And for not saying Anthony Michael Hall, which is what I would have done.
I thought Jeffrey Dean. I wanted to say Jeffrey Dean Morgan just because I wanted 3 names like an assassin.
That's a very different show.
Very different.
I'm here for it.
Yep.
All right, we're going to go official here. G.O.B. Bluth.
To Sarah.
Yes.
Yes. Who is about to, no doubt, make a terrible mistake. That is Arrested Development. And who would be her dose? Michael Cera.
That was Portia de Rossi. Oh. Yeah, correct. In the number 2 slot, let's go to Tara. Yep. Duncan Kane.
Okay. This is Veronica Mars. Second build is probably Logan Eccles. Shit.
Somebody I've never heard of. Percy Daggs the Third.
Oh, that's what's his face? Yeah. The friend.
Wallace.
Eve Beatty. Hoban Walsh Walshburn. Hoban Walsh Walshburn.
Okay. I'm gonna assume this is Firefly. And let's say number two is Gina Torres.
That is good for 2 points.
Hey!
Nice.
You are totally correct.
Well done.
Space.
Deborah Morgan for Sarah D. Bunting.
Deborah Morgan. This is Dexter. So if Dexter himself is number one.
I'm going to have to call an audible on this one. You go ahead.
Oh.
Yeah.
What's the problem?
I don't think the answer that is provided could be right for season one.
Ooh.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
This is intriguing.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure I can even come up with an actress name. I am pretty sure that is the... Oh, yeah. Let's try Julie Benz.
Was she on season one?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I didn't think she came until later.
No, she
then
was.
Then I apologize, and you are right.
Well done. Thank
you. I thought she was a later addition.
No, she was in it from the start.
Okay. My apologies to you.
To Shannon. For doubting him.
To Dexter. To all the lumberjacks out there. Tara Ariano.
Yes.
Alan Doyle.
Hint.
Alan Doyle was a character on Angel.
Oh, okay.
I believe just known as Doyle.
Oh, yeah, right, of course. Glenn, what's his face from Roseanne, who is now no longer with
but
us.
But who is second build on Angel?
Charisma Carpenter?
Yeah, correct.
There you go.
Eve Beatty, Jenna Maroney.
Oh, okay, so this is 30 Rock. And, so who would be number two, Tina Fey? No, shit. The thing, because Alec Baldwin is an and. I'm going to go with Tina Fey anyway and say that Alec Baldwin is number one. But
Eve.
No. Okay, wait. Anybody want to guess?
Cause Tracy it's not Morgan?
Yeah, it's Tracy Morgan. Yeah.
Okay.
Sarah D. Bunting, last question for you for the aughts. Nina Myers.
Oh, man. Okay. So this is 24. Boop. the Keef would have been number one. And in season one, oh, my God, what is her goddamn name? We did such a long interview with her, and she was so charming, and she's married to that guy who's Canadian, was in the Monkees movie, Leslie Hope.
2 points.
Sorry, that took so long for me to work through it with all of you.
Talking through it helped, though, didn't it? Yeah.
Sure did.
Tara Ariano, yes. Sam Merlot.
Merlot, I think.
Oh, is it? Okay.
O-T-T-E?
Yeah.
Okay, well, this is True Blood.
I cannot.
I believe it is True Blood. And in season one, second build. What's the dude who has a generic name and is Australian? I don't know his name. I don't know.
Sam Merlot.
Yeah.
From True Blood.
Uh-huh.
Was three.
Yes.
Actor in number two, Stephen Moyer.
There it is.
Yeah. All right. Ooh. Last question of the aughts round. Adia of the Julii.
To Eve.
What?
Yep.
Attia.
That's what I said, Attia.
Okay.
Which show is this?
This is Rome.
Oh. Shit. I don't know. Kevin McKidd.
That's a good guess.
Very good
guess. Right on the same plane, except it's the other guy, Ray Stevenson.
Mm.
Yeah, his buddy. All right, so that means we are done with the odds.
Okay. Eve has 8 points. Sarah has 9 points. I have 19 points.
Okay. Well, mathematically, somebody could tie you.
Pincer motion.
Here we go. 2010, starting with Sarah, Lori Grimes.
Lori Grimes.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. I'm going to be mad that I asked for this hint, but I need a hint.
The Walking Dead is the show.
Yeah. Pretty mad at that. Carl. As I am with anything involving that fucking actress. Who is number two? Who indeed?
In season one.
Season one. Might have been number two. It's that guy who looks like Fred Ward. John Bernthal.
Nice.
He totally does look like Jim.
He does. That was amazing.
Oh my
Sarah.
God. Williams remake.
Like, I never remember his name. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Oh, well done. All right. Tara Ariano, yeah. Dr. Izzy Stevens.
Okay. This is Grey's Anatomy. I'm going to say second build was in season one, Sandra Oh.
That is good for 2 points. E. Nice. Beatty, Jamie Lannister.
Okay, so this is a show called Game of Thrones.
Uh-huh.
Season one. That's challenging. I'm just gonna say Peter Dinklage.
Wait, I'm gonna give you a clue.
Okay.
Here in the mercy round. The clue is did not progress beyond season one, I believe. Perhaps not the obvious choice.
Oh shit, it's Sean Bean.
No, the other one.
God damn it! Well,
who's somebody else who didn't survive that long? I believe
right
also from the Full Monty, I want to say.
Robert Carlyle?
No. Was Maddie Mark
show?
Addy?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was from Full Monty, right?
Yep.
Mark Addy. He played the king at the start.
I'm sorry that even with all those hints.
Yes, he was, what's her face's husband? Cersei.
Yes. Sarah D. Bunting, Margaret Schroeder.
Margaret Schroeder.
Schroeder?
I believe.
Yeah, Schroeder sounds right.
Margaret
Schroeder.
Schroeder.
Don't think they ever pronounced it Schroeder.
Okay.
Another one I'm going to kick myself for. Hint, please.
Boardwalk Empire.
Wow, she was third?
She had a pretty big part in season one.
Yeah, it's true. So it was her, and it was, oh, God, that guy and that other guy and the guy who's not Bobby Cannavale. Let's go with Shay Whigham.
I like that guess.
Michael Pitt.
That bitch.
Oh, that fucker.
Yep. All right, Tari Ariano, Jessica Brody.
Oh, God. I've, like, completely fell out of my brain. Okay, this is Homeland. So second build in season one would have been Damian Lewis?
Yep,
okay.
Correct. 2 points back to Eve. Yes. Zoe Barnes.
Oh, I was wondering when this would come up.
Oh, yeah.
This name is so familiar to me. I'm sorry. I have to ask for the...
House of Cards.
Robin Wright?
You are correct. Good for 1 point. Sarah Bunting, Gary Walsh.
Gary Walsh, hint.
Veep.
I'm sorry, I don't know. Who would be number two?
Tara, guess.
Is it Anna Chlumsky?
It is Anna Chlumsky.
Oh, yeah. Well, oh, well.
Cyril Figgis.
Okay, this is Archer.
Yeah.
I'm going to say second build is...
You're watching the credits in your head.
Yep, I am.
Where's that ball bouncing to?
Yeah. Is it Jessica Walter?
Oh,
is it
Greer.
Aisha Tyler? Damn it!
Yeah, Judy Greer.
Really? Oh,
yeah. Huh. DCI Ian Reed for Eve. There's a good geographic clue there for you. DCI, Ian Reed.
Is the show, you can't tell me, but is the show Luther? I say, because I'm not certain, but not because I expect you to confirm. And if the show is Luther,
it doesn't matter
because I'm not going to win, then it's Ruth, what's her name, whose last name I can't remember.
Oh, yeah. Well, I thought you were going to say the last name. Do you want to take a stab at the last name?
No,
It's a volleyball company.
Ruth Wilson?
Yep.
I swear to God, you guys, I watch television sometimes.
Sarah D. Bunting, Chris
Rita Wilson,
Chris Amador.
Chris, what now?
Amador.
Hint:
The Americans. Second build on The Americans.
Yeah, who would it be?
Second build.
Who has the better agent? Or worse, I guess.
That's a good question. I'm going with actually The American having the better agent, and I'm going to guess Matthew Rhys.
Nice!
Kim Wexler for Tara.
Okay, this is Better Call Saul. And therefore, second build is Jonathan Banks.
You are correct. That's good for 2 points. Nice. Everybody's... Nope, not yet. Dr. Alana Bloom. Dr. Alana Bloom.
For Eve.
For Eve.
What show is this?
Hannibal.
Oh, god damn. Okay, so Mads Mikkelsen is number second. Two then? Is second?
You're correct. That is the right answer. Somebody's got a good age. Or was that, is that alphabetical or something on that?
I don't know.
Well, no, I just think Hugh, more people knew Hugh Dance.
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In this
terrible.
Country.
I hate that guy. Sarah D. Bunting, Angela Moss.
Angela Moss.
I know you know the show.
I do know episode. The show. It is Mr. Robot.
Affirmative.
I think Slater's. I think Slater's at the end. But who else would be second? Actually, I'm not sure he is at the end. I think I just think he is because he's also a producer. So let's guess Christian Slater.
Oh, no.
Carly Chai? Something?
Oh, Chaykin. Darlene. Chaykin?
That was my second choice. Shit.
All right, Tara, here's your last question. Okay. Libby Masters.
Okay. This is Masters of Sex. And I'm going to say second build is Lizzie Kaplan.
You are correct. That is good for 2 points. Last question of the game for Eve. Your character in the third slot, Foggy Nelson.
What show is this?
Nice.
This is Daredevil. Daredevil.
Oh, sorry.
Is it Rosario Dawson? Is it number two?
I wish.
Deborah Ann Wall.
Wall.
The blonde one with the teeth.
Brian Wall. All right, let's get those final scores, please, Tara.
Well, congratulations, Tara.
Okay. Eve and Sarah were tied with 11 each, and I had more than that.
Okay. All right, everybody.
27.
Shits and giggles time. First person to shout out the answer wins 5 Dave points. All right.
Ooh.
In the first season of The West Wing, who was second billed?
Elsa Jenny.
That's what I was going to say. Well, you, Sarah.
What were you? You can still guess, Tara. You haven't guessed it.
Oh, right.
Second build in the first season of The West Wing. The answer is there.
Martin Sheen?
You're just scared to say it.
Okay, now it's all Sarah.
Rob Lowe?
Nope. All right, everybody's back in it.
Oh, shit. Bradley Whitford?
Nope. West Wing, first season, second build. The answer may surprise
Dr.
you.
Dr. Channing?
Eve?
I'm out of
We're going to get there.
I know.
All right, back open to everybody.
John Spencer?
Nope.
Are you sure someone hasn't said it?
Yep.
Okay.
A surprising second build. Actor from season one of The West Wing.
I just got
Sarah Bunting. You still have a guest left before I open it back up.
I just got it.
Sounds like Tara just got it.
I did.
I couldn't hear over all the groaning what other people guessed.
Well, nobody guessed the right one. Everybody guessed the whole cast almost, except for this one person.
Already guessed have been John Spencer, Rob Lowe, Martin Sheen, Bradley Whitford, Allison Janney.
Martin Sheen.
Stalker Channing.
So okay.
None of those.
And
now
here's another
my
hint.
Mind is completely emptied of the guy who played Toby. Is it him?
Moira Kelly.
It is Moira Kelly.
Ew.
Exited after season one. Had a really great agent, we suppose.
Jesus.
Tara. Tara.
Good job, Tara.
Thanks.
Okay, everybody, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We discussed our picks, our pans, and hopes for the new fall TV season before Sarah reported back in on JonBenet Palooza and Tara celebrated her butt-centric tiny triumph. Allison and Elisa could not justify their pick for the canon. Tara crowned Emmy winners and losers of the week and was also the winner of this week's Second Fiddle Game Time. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Toronto
Mennonites,
Sarah D. Bunting,
just a bit outside,
and Eve Beatty,
I saved your gun hand.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Crate.
Gentlemen, this is really fascinating and strangely heartbreaking, but I just don't see what I get out of all this.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.